Almost there. Anything else?
Am I bringing
Tom?
Charlene's
one? Is there any kind of an inventory of housing today in the whole world? I mean, how many people are living in RVs? How many houses? How many unoccupied houses? Do we have any inventory?
I think Michela did something along that line. Tina, can you say anything about that? What was done? That would be about 4 years old.
It's part of the
housing work group, you know. And that was something I also forgot to mention. I want to give a big thanks to all the people who worked on the general plan and in the housing work group that put together that report in 2018. Because I think everyone was on the right track. And then something like called COVID, was it? Something like that hit. You know, and we've all lost 2 years of momentum here. So it's time to pick up and build on what already so much had been done. But yeah, I think, you know, in terms of the work groups, I think that might be something that the housing needs work group can really focus on, is getting an understanding of how many people are inadequately housed. You know, I really don't. The one statistic that is frightening was up here on this board where I had these slides from the different reports. For Garfield County, it's around 48% vacant housing. I think Boulder, when Michela did her survey, it was in the mid-40s. You know, we have a lot of second home, investor-owned vacation homes. I don't care about those people. They're taking care of themselves. We're talking here tonight about the people who are inadequately housed. And I think that housing needs work group could really, that's going to be the people who can start self-identifying what are the needs. So yes, good question. Anything else? Otherwise, we are there at 7. So are we on Zoom here, Peg? Oh, okay.
I'm going to make a quick note on the microphone when I pass it around. I'm going to keep it off so that it doesn't mess with the Zoom. When I first turn it on, it stays, this light is red for like a good 5-10 seconds. So just don't start speaking until this light is green.
Okay. So 7 o'clock, we will start the meeting. Welcome everyone again, and especially those who are here online. As I said, my name is John Varanth. I'll be moderating tonight, but most of the speaking will be done by our invited speakers, Charlene, Dave Conine, Jerry Taylor, Jim Catmull. So we will get going. Let's say this is an information sharing session. We're building on the excellent work group done by the citizens who volunteered on the general plan and the 2018 housing work group. No specific project is being advocated tonight. Rather, we're sharing information about what has worked in nearby communities and getting community feedback on what things are going to be compatible with and work in Boulder. You know, sometimes I've heard some fears in conversations. We're not talking about any kind of massive housing development. We're talking about creating a few residences at a time that are compatible with the community in locations where a landowner is willing to support affordable housing. As I said earlier, but I'll repeat for the people on Zoom, this is a community-wide effort. We're one community. County residents share the same issues, and housing for local workers and families is equally valuable, whether inside the town or in the adjacent county. So everybody's welcome to participate. So with that, I am going to, I think the sequence we're going to do, if it's okay with everyone, is we'll do our two invited speakers, then we'll do the elected officials. That okay with everyone? Okay. So Charlene Wild is with Neighborhood Works Mountain Country Home Solutions. Did I get the whole name right? NeighborWorks. Okay, NeighborWorks Mountain Country Home Solutions, which is a housing nonprofit. She was involved with the projects at Tropic and Escalante and has local Boulder ties. So with that, I will turn it over to you, Charlene.
Thank you. Yeah, my local Boulder ties is I was born and raised here. So, yeah, and I don't know if these little girls know how lucky and blessed they are to grow up here. Okay, can you, Peg, can you cue it up here?
No, but
Okay. The first thing I want to tell you is I am not here to sell you anything. Okay. I'm not here. I am just here for information. I'm not going to tell you what you should do. I just want you to know some of the things that you should consider, some of the things that you should think about, some of the things that are out there that you might be able to use. And then the decision is strictly yours. So just know that. I'm not here to sell you anything.
Keep talking.
Okay.
I can watch your presentation, and I think the Zoom people can too, but it's not showing up here.
The presentation?
Yeah. We're on
one.
We're on one now.
Okay. Well, I've been doing this for 20 years, so I'll just tell you that. That's where you tell me that I started. I don't look that old. But I was in city government for 20 years. I have a master's degree in accounting and finance. I've been married for 40 years to the same man. And I have two children and five absolutely beautiful. I love my kids, but I worship my five grandchildren. Okay, that was my treat for raising my kids. So, and they love this place. My son has hunted deer on the mountain for years and years and years. They fished at the power plant. Some of the things that I'm guessing you might feel strongly about are, I know I used to live up on the ranch, and it's right across from the power plant. And we lived in an old ranch house up there that didn't have any glass in the windows. Okay. But there was it was just over the hill from the street, but we couldn't see anybody. And I loved that. We knew we had neighbors. Dell and Gladys lived just down the road, but we felt like we had our little piece of paradise. And that may be something that's important to you. As you consider housing, you may want to look at that and consider how you place things. But I can, as you look at your zoning ordinances and that type of thing, are we getting close?
Try.
I'm dead, I don't think you want to hear all my family stories here because most of you don't know me. So. Okay. All right. I think we're off and running now. Okay. And I kind of talk with my hands. And if you can't hear me, I'm sorry. I'll try to stay here. But go ahead and move it forward. Okay. Housing is a really, really complex issue. Okay. It is not something that you go, okay. It's no big deal. We just go ahead and build housing. That's not the case. You've got to balance your needs with your desires. Would we like all super fancy, nice things? No. Yeah, we would. But sometimes you have to balance those wants and needs or those desires and needs. Some of the things that you have to consider are the longtime residents. Okay. This is a community that I was here 60 years ago. And these longtime residents are very important. My father was here for all of his life. Gladys has been here all of her most of her life. Those longtime residents are very, very important. And you need to consider those as you consider housing issues. Elected officials are very, very important. And I think that you need, you're working with them. Business owners. Jimmy, we've got business owners. You need to consider their needs as well. Schools, are you going to keep your schools healthy and be able to keep these little kids going? I notice all of these little names and they're so cute. And then potential new residents. I see some young faces and I think that's wonderful. You need to consider their needs and desires as well. Oh, that's too far. Okay, go back. Do you have that? Is that connected? Can I have that? Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right. There you go. Okay. One more down. Okay. those in need of housing. It's not just potential people that might move here, but those that are already here and are in need of housing. And you all here tell me that there are people that are in need of housing. The ability to create housing. What type of housing are you thinking about? I think you have to really consider that. Not everybody needs 4-bedroom, 2.5 bath, great big homes. Not everybody wants tiny homes. You have to consider who you're going to house and build to that population. Zoning is critical. I'm going to tell you, I know that you want to keep the country feel, and you've got, that's absolutely very, very important. But you've also got to bear in mind that ground is expensive around here. It's expensive everywhere, but it's very expensive, and you can't make attainable housing if the ground is too expensive. The families have to be able to afford water, okay? And they have to have the time and the ability to take care of it. So you have to bear all of those things in mind as you look at your zoning ordinances.
I think so.
If it's working,
okay, so can you get behind me, because we're kind of ported in here.
All right.
I'm not sure which slide
you're on. You're just fine. The next one. And then I'll just kind of speak to the issues. That one. Okay, land availability is another thing that you need to consider. Whoop, what happened? There we go. Yeah, land availability. Is there land available to purchase? Is there land available to donate? Is anybody? Senator Lee has put forth a bill that would permit municipalities to purchase BLM or Forest Service land. And if that passes, that may be an option for you.
Are we here yet?
No, we're not. We've got to go back there. The cost of land is something that you have to consider. Building costs are something that you also have to consider. There's all sorts of different types of building, and I'm not going to get into that because Dave has that kind of information for you. But you need to consider the cost of building. Right now, just a stick-built home is running about $230 a square foot.
Jeez.
And I just bid out 7 homes in Enoch, right above Cedar City, last week. They came in at $230 a square foot. The bigger the house, the smaller the prices per square foot, the smaller the house, it's just math. That's just how it works. So building costs are something that you have to consider. Design, and Dave is an expert at design, and I will leave that to him, but design is something that you have to look at. Funding sources. Okay, there's not a lot of free money out there, and I've been doing this for 20 years. I do know of some grants, but funding sources, you can use loans from the bank, which always have to be paid back. And right now with the interest rates, it's pretty tough to make those deals pencil. There's a state rural housing grant that I worked on the committee to actually get that appropriation, which I might as well have pulled out my back teeth because it was really hard to get. But we did get it, and we made can I just keep this?
Yeah.
Yeah. We made it, and I had Boulder and Escalante and Garfield County in mind when we did that. Jerry was on that committee, and we went for remote Utah, not rural Utah. And that money, I have actually tapped into it once. So that money was available. I've tapped into to Garfield County money. They have been incredibly generous with helping us get projects going. So funding sources are something that's tough. You got to know how to write grants. Federal Home Loan Bank has participated in your county from Des Moines, Iowa, to bring money in. There's tax credits. There's all sorts of funding sources. It's not all free money, but some of it you don't have to pay back. There's also philanthropic donations. People donate ground. They'll say, oh, yeah, we think that that's a good idea. Okay, there's kind of a three-legged stool here. You've got to have potential developers. You've got to have somebody who's willing to come and build this stuff.
And you've got, but most developers want to come to town, they want to get it built, and they want to leave. And so you've got to have a good property manager to stay with your project and make sure that it not only stays attainable, but that it stays maintained and that people behave themselves. Okay. But, and that's not always the case, but you manager is the whole key to keeping it a successful situation where it doesn't turn into something that you wish you didn't have in town. Okay, I'm going to show you some of the projects that we've done. If you haven't seen them already, we built two new homes in Tropic. And Jerry was instrumental in helping us get to that point. We had a meeting. What is it? It's been about 3.5, 4 years ago. It's 4 years this month. Right now, we pulled every single mayor in this county together, and it was the most dynamic meeting I have ever attended. It took me 3 hours to settle down from that meeting. It was amazing. I have never seen a group of people come together and work together to actually accomplish something like that group did. And the results of that were we built these homes in Tropic, and then we were fortunate enough to be able to buy 6 more. Right in the same area that had been kind of neglected. And we have gone through and completely repainted and put in new flooring and new appliances. And while they've been people living in there and made them tidy up a bit. And it is actually our efforts, and I'm going to take a little credit for this, but our efforts have actually brought this little neighborhood to where there's another developer who has come in there and he's built some duplexes and some single family homes, and it's turning into a very nice little neighborhood. We haven't quite got all the landscaping done. That'll be next spring. But I think they turned out really good. We did 3 homes in Richfield, and this is how they turned out. And they're absolutely gorgeous. Now, I found this one on the internet. And this is a will build in Panguitch. It's out on the multiple listings. And you can see that they will build this house for you in Panguitch. 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,565 square feet. And there's the price. Does it include the land? I don't know. I couldn't tell from the advertisement, but that is a lot of money. Okay, and that's what we built in Escalante. And I already know some of you both said it's ugly. Okay, I already know that. Give me a little time, okay? It's a construction site, okay? Give me a little time to get some landscaping in, get the paving in, get some trees in. Just give me a little more time. We tried to color it so that it blends in with the mountains, but just give me a little more time, okay? All right, because I already know the comments, but it is still, we barely finished it. 3 units are rented and we have a little bit of interest on the 4th one, and it will be, we've got a bunch of little kids in there and I'm so excited. So just give me just about this much more time. All right, this is what we have going so far. We have 12 homes, my organization, the one that I've run for 20 years. We have 12 homes going up in Kanab. We have 21 in Enoch. We have 2 potential right next to this one in Escalante that I'm going to try, that'll be single family homes that I'm going to try to get into a program that I'll tell you about. And 28 townhomes in Ivins, and Wayne County has asked us to come to their county and start building, do some attainable housing in their area. Right now, they're still working on kind of what they want to see and what they want it to look like. They're going with 2 duplexes and 4plexes, but they're right at the mouth of Capitol Reef. And so that's what they're looking at this point. That's a good point. Let me get to that because sort of, kind of. All right, let's consider some different housing types. Okay, everybody knows single family homes. I just showed you a bunch of them. Okay, there are twin homes, which you can put garages together and kind of get that economy of scale a little bit and put two units on a piece of property instead of one. There's duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. The one in Escalante's a fourplex. There's modular homes. I noticed quite a few modular homes in town already. So that's a housing style that you already have. There are tiny and small homes, and that will kind of help with the seasonal group that might come to town to help with the summer crowds and the deer hunt crowds and that kind of thing. And yes, I do know about deer hunt. Let me show you some possibilities, and I'm not going to try to sell you on them, and everybody's got different opinions, and you know, my couch doesn't look like your couch, but here's some smaller homes, two bedroom, one bath, two bedroom, two bath. Okay, kind of has the country feel. Bear in mind, you can put all sorts of landscaping in front of them so you can't see them if you want to, but that's kind of the more country feel look. You can do that kind of look, or you can do more of a country cottage type with the front porch, or something that's a little bit more with the clapboard type. But those are smaller homes, two bedroom, one bath. You can make them a little bigger if you want to, but you know, that's kind of something to consider. And then you have, see, there's a sample of a twin home. You always want to try to put parking together. You don't want to put sleeping space together or living space together if you can help it. So that people just don't hear each other, because that just bugs people. Then you've got tiny homes. And tiny homes, I have seen tiny homes with every kind of, you can get them made out of storage containers. But I thought these were a little classy. And the key to a nice tiny home is the outdoor space. You want to create some outdoor space in addition to the small inside space. See how cute little craftsman style tiny home. Front porch. More of a log cabin feel, kind of a deck situation. You can also have your interiors that look kind of long and thin, and they have a loft on top for your bedroom, or you can have them a little wider and they have more of the.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay. So there are all sorts of things to consider. I'm going to echo here. All right. Other attainable housing. Okay, you have some existing housing stock. I'm going to give you an example. I don't know who owns it. I have no clue. But Otto and Idonna Hans's house right across from Grandma's house would be a possibility that you could actually purchase and rehab something and turn it from a vacation rental or a family estate rental into something that would house a family. I have done a lot of this, is purchase, rehab, resale, where you can actually purchase it, rehab it, and USDA is very good at providing funding for that, and then turn around and sell it to a family, or you can do purchase, rehab, rent. And I currently have about 100 units in a rental portfolio right now, our organization does. And so we about half of our portfolio is a purchase, rehab, rent situation. I'm going to show you kind of what you can turn them into. Okay. We bought this one. It's in the 50s, kind of a, and we turned it into that. We added a bedroom and a bathroom is all we did, and a little kind of parking, and it turned it into something quite nice. Okay, this was a classic. I'm a tough girl, but I would not go into this house. It had raw sewage in it. And, oh, it was just horrid. Whoops, no, you're going backwards. Something's sitting on there. It was so bad. I'm not kidding. And these people never did laundry. They just threw the clothes out in the backyard and went to Kmart when we all had Kmart and bought new stuff. Then that was that place. I'm not kidding. That's an actual, that is not a rendering. Keep going. That's a photo. Keep going. More. So anyway, if there are some vacant homes, I know, like I said, my grandmother's home kind of makes me sad. I have no control over that. Just I want to put that caveat in there. My cousins own that house. I don't. But it could be fixed up, turned into a great little house, and rented out to a family. And I imagine there are, I know in Esclant, there are some family estates that people come around for the Easter, the 24th of July, and the 4th of July. And that's about it. Maybe deer hunt. And that's if they draw out. Yeah. If they draw out. And that's the extent of it. And it sits vacant and empty the rest of the time. Are you?
Yeah. Pause some interaction with
you. Anyway, you can purchase these homes, rehab them, rent them out. That's certainly an option. I think there are some programs out there. There's some funding sources, like I told you about, but there's a program that's called the Crown Program, okay? And it is actually through Utah Housing Corporation. And Crown stands for Credit to Own. And that is what I wanted to tell you about in answer to your question. Most of the homes that you saw that we were building in Kanab and Enoch and the ones that were in Richfield are actually under the Crown Program. And what that is those are built for families that are at 60% area median income. And Dave will tell you what those numbers are at the, when he gets up here. But 60, and they actually rent to own them. Okay, they can rent them for 15 years, and the rent is geared for a family that's 60% or under. Usually we hit around 54-53% area median income. And I believe area median income is around 69,000 or something like that. And they can rent that house. Oh, there's the house. And that is what it turned into. After a rehab, it did cost us $80,000 to do that, but we completely gutted the inside. It had raw sewage in it. I had no plumbing. It was just nasty. The water didn't work, and people were living in this thing when we bought it, and we turned it into that. So can we, is it going to keep going? Okay, there you go. Okay, this is the before. Now, this is a really old house that we bought. And we gutted the inside, but we turned it into that. And a lot of it can just be simply really doing some nice curb appeal. We did kind of gut out the inside, put in a new kitchen, new bathrooms, and that kind of thing. But it turned out really nice. So purchase rehab is certainly an option that can happen if you can get some willing sellers here. Okay. Challenges that you might have. NIMBYism, not in my backyard. Do not put this close to me. I don't want it. I don't want to see it. That can be an issue. Large zoning lots and can be something that can be a hindrance that you need to look at. Now, that doesn't mean, now I really want you to understand, that does not mean you have to go and zone the whole town into small quarter acre lots. You can have what's called a pro zone or some sort of zone that you actually have to approve what's in it, and you set the size of the lots that are within that development, and it doesn't affect the rest of the town. Okay, so you can do that. The cost of land and construction is something that you really have to look at. Every little fancy knick-knacky doodad that you put in the design does cost money, so bear that in mind. But you want some. Infrastructure, availability, and cost. This is the things that I look at when somebody says, when Tori called me and said, come over, we want you to build. Well, there's a guy that's got some property clear out there on the Teasdale Road. There is, utilities are not anywhere near this property. There's no way I can afford to do anything there unless he's willing to bring the utilities a little closer. There's no electricity. There's no water. I can always handle the septic tank. I know how to do that. But you got to have water and you got to have electricity. So infrastructure is an issue. Design differences. Like I said, my couch doesn't look like Judy's couch. And everybody has their own opinions about what they want. So you have to kind of come together, and everybody's got to be willing to do a little compromise. Overnight rentals are an issue. And I think that you need to consider that so that you're not overtaken like some of the communities that I know in this state are with overnight rentals, mostly down in the south end of the state. Family vacation homes, my grandma's house, you know, we are guilty as anybody can be. And that can be an issue. And that is taking away from your attainable housing stock. Okay, I want to talk to you. You can put deed restrictions on these things. Deed restrictions are a mechanism that run with the land, okay? And you can restrict who can live there at what income. Now, generally, when somebody moves in, you qualify them when they move in. You do not make them move out if they get a better job, or they are able to improve their income. Maybe the wife goes to work part-time. You don't make them move out. You qualify them at the time they move in. And so, but you can do deed restrictions where that management company does not let a family move in that doesn't qualify. And you can do it in three different ways. You can do income. Income is perfectly legal under fair housing. You can do it occupancy. You can make it be owner-occupied if you want to, or you can keep it as a rental. And you can make it employment-based. Somebody has to have a job in Boulder. If they don't work here, they don't get one of these houses. And that is perfectly legal with fair housing as well. So you do not get somebody in these. Yeah, they make 54% or 60% or 80% of area median income, but they work in Beaver. That doesn't solve the problem, okay? So you can make it employment-based. Okay, the Crown program, I told you about the credit to own. They can live there for 15 years. They pay rent. It's based on their income. And a portion of that rent goes to buy down the price of the home. And after 15 years, they can purchase the home at about 60% of the value of the home, which makes it affordable while they're paying and then affordable once they buy. So it is a great program, and it is just a hit across the state. It's been going for about 20 years. And I don't know of a family who does not love that program, because they feel like when they're paying that rent, they're not making the landlord rich. They're actually contributing to their own personal wealth. It may not be quite as quick, but it's affordable. There's self-help homes, that's sweat equity. And there's organizations that do that. I happen to know the gentleman that does a lot of them, Brad Bishop for Self-Help Homes. He's wonderful, and he's a good friend of mine. That's an option that you might want to consider. Community Land Trust. I just started a community land trust in Washington County. It's called the Southwest Utah Community Land Trust. And that is where the family purchases just the building on top and not the land underneath. So making the payment much more affordable. So instead of paying a payment on $400,000, now they pay a payment on $200,000, and the land stays in the community land trust. They have a ground lease. They do have to pay a ground lease. It's usually about $75 a month. And that ground lease is what ties that ground to the house. The ground lease is 99 years. Okay, so it's a very stable situation. Every time somebody wants to sell, then they have to sell to another qualified family. And that lease is signed again for 99 years. If somebody dies, they can leave it to their heirs. And that lease is re-upped for 99 years. It is the only permanent attainable housing mechanism that I know of. And we've got one going now there's one in Moab, and it is doing well. Somebody donated 50 acres to them. I think it was a star, kind of a movie star. Somebody had a lot of money, and they are putting up 270 units, and they are doing great. There's one out of Park City, and they are doing very well as well. And then there's housing tax credits. That's kind of a 50-year deal. And the Crown Home does use housing tax credits. And then there's other funding sources, Federal Home Loan Bank, there's the state, there's all sorts of Lean Walker Housing Loan Fund, and they all have different restrictions. That's why you've got to have a good manager that can make sure that you don't break any of those regulations and restrictions. Okay, assuring attainability was something that I kind of keyed on at the last meeting. And that is absolutely critical. If you're going to do this, make sure it stays that way. I built a development up in Provo about 20 years ago. And they sold. They were attainable at the time. Right now, they're going for $565,000 a piece because there was no mechanism in place to keep them attainable. So you want to do something to keep them attainable. Again, management. You've got to have somebody with housing experience, okay? I'm not selling my organization. You need to find the organization that fits for you. Is it somebody out of Moab? Is it Beaver Housing Authority? Is it five county AOG? Is it our organization? That whatever fits for you, that's, you need that third stool. You've got to have the community, you've got to have the elected officials, and you've got to have a good management company. And what happens with three-legged stool when one of those legs isn't there? It falls down, and it will, and it does every time. Management that knows the regulations associated with those funding sources, because if you break those, they will come in and make you pay it back. And it turns into a disaster. And management that has the capital to keep these things maintained, okay? Again, I have 100 rental units, and you know, we hauled a dishwasher to Tropic today because you have to have the cash to be able to keep these things maintained. I insist upon a higher level of tenant, okay? I do not ignore them. These six houses that we bought in Tropic had been ignored. They were managed by a company out of Salt Lake that didn't. I'm not even sure they knew where Tropic was. And I convinced Utah Housing Corporation to let me come in and buy those homes. But we've had to have some capital. We've put in we bought tough sheds for them. I think we put in about $80,000 to $100,000 just into those six homes. You've got to have some money if you're going to keep this. And that's not that would be, you wouldn't have to have that much to get started, but you've got to have an organization that's got a little capital. And the management that cares. Again, I told you that it was a group out of Salt Lake that did not give a hoot about those homes in Tropic. They didn't care about the tenants. They didn't care about that town at all. You've got to have a management company that cares and is willing to listen to you and work with you and do what you want them to do. There are a few incentives. If any of you have property that you would consider contributing, there are some incentives that you can get. If you donate to a nonprofit, you can donate to a land trust, you can donate to any nonprofit that you bring in, and that is a tax write-off to you. You can specify, if you do donate, some control over that. If any of you own businesses and you wish to restrict the occupancy to your employees, that is perfectly legal. If you donate property, the town could consider density bonuses if somebody's going to donate and assist in the attainable housing arena. Again, employer restricted, you can do that. I'm trying to do this off memory. Essential worker priorities, you can restrict it to teachers. You can say, you know, we want to anybody that's an essential worker. Essential worker can be somebody who works the roads in town, you know, I think it's county run. I think Dad used to run, work for the county. But you can also tie it to preserving open space. Okay. Somebody chooses to donate land, you can donate it on the caveat that part of it is preserved and part of it is for attainable housing. And I'm about done here. So I think that's pretty much it. There's those three parts. There's the elected officials, which I could not have done this without Jerry. He has been instrumental in this. He loves this county. And it's been a joy to work with Jerry. Again, you need a nonprofit housing partner. I think that's really important because the nonprofit is mission-based and they're not permitted. They're permitted to survive, but they're not permitted to make money. Okay. They have to keep the lights on and the people paid and enough reserves to keep things going. But their goal, when I do a development, if I get 3% off of it to pay salaries, I feel like I'm done well. Your standard is about 12 to 15. The nonprofit also has access to non-traditional capital. A nonprofit can apply for funding that oftentimes a private developer can't. They ensure compliance on restrictions. Again, funding sources are very, you've got to follow those restrictions. HUD, oh my goodness. The restrictions are that deep with HUD. Dave's up here laughing because he knows exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not kidding. They're that deep. And so you've got to do that. Income, occupancy, those are all very important. And your management company will take care of that. And I feel like I'm repeating myself. So know your, this is my last slide, I believe. Know your target population. Do not build 4-bedroom, 3-bath houses, and you are trying to house some singles and couples. Don't do that, okay? Or don't build a tiny home village when you've got families that have 3 kids that need a place to be. So know who your target population is. Identify your housing types. What do you want to see? Zoning that invites that housing, okay? And housing related infrastructure is really important, and resources. Those are the things that you need to look at and make decisions and then try to find somebody to work with you on that. Okay. I believe that's it. I hope you've learned something. Yeah. I'm not in charge. So yes, I will use this one. Okay.
Are there any questions?
In the article I read about the housing that was
Dead,
I might not remember the wording exactly, but my memory is that no single people were allowed to live in it. It had to be people who were related to each other. And I'm wondering if that's a choice that Escalante made or if that is something that NeighborWorks requires.
No, actually, that was the funding source that drove that decision. It is not a decision that we make. You know, single people need a roof over their head, too. And roommates are fine. But it was the Federal Home Loan Bank we can't rent a 3-bedroom home to one person. Because you see, you have bedrooms that could be consumed by someone else. Now, the families that actually live there, they only have one little child or one that's soon to be born probably next week. And so there is an empty bedroom, but there's the potential for that family to grow. So that answers your question there.
When you build a home and it's sold below market value, essentially subsidized through your program, mm-hmm. So how do you ensure attainability that if the owners decide to sell it, if the current market price, which has been grossly inflated due to property value increases?
There's generally deed restriction that's placed on it.
Which would be so much percentage per year increase?
Yes, yes. Okay. That deed restriction would ensure that the home is sold to another family
that qualifies income-wise at a price that they can afford. So actually the deed restriction, and this is where your management company comes in, they actually set the price that that family can sell that home for. So let's say they purchased the home for $150,000 and they live in it for 7 or 8 years and they need to sell. They've got a great job somewhere else and they're going to move somewhere else. Well, the home is appreciated to $275,000, but a family at 80% area median income can only afford $225,000. Then the family would only get the equity up to the 225. Now that seems, you're thinking, well, that's not really fair, but you know what? It kind of is, because the odds that that family in the beginning could afford to become a homeowner is very slim. Because if they purchased that home at 150, odds are homes were going for 225 at the time they bought the home. So they don't acquire equity as quickly, but they're getting something.
Anyone else? I love it. Yeah.
I actually asked you this question a few years ago, and I'm curious if there have been any changes. Have you looked into using any natural building materials? Do you have any projects going that do that? Or are they all kind of like mainstream, less expensive materials?
Actually, I don't do less expensive. But I love the natural option. And I'm going to let Dave go into that because I think he's going to talk about some of those things. I love that idea. Not always are they as inexpensive as you might think. But man, I love what he's going to present to you. And so I would really like to see, there's some new stuff out there that I just found out about. That is kind of a more of a prefab with foam and that kind of thing, because and there's the straw bale, and he'll get into that. But I'm looking for anything that really helps with utilities. And so I try to not build. And I'll tell you why I don't build cheap is because try to maintain that 5 years down the road. And so, yeah, we try to not build because it holds up better and maintenance is a whole lot cheaper on our end. So, but I would love to look into, and I actually am looking into that, but it's not always, can I make a pencil? These deals are hard to put together, aren't they? I'm not kidding. It took me 3 years to put the Tropic and Escalant deal together. It's hard.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you usually bring in a building team to make these, or would you hire local?
I hire as local as I can. If there's somebody available, I usually have a general contractor, to be honest with you, because I think that's important. You want licensed electricians and licensed people, but we hire as local as possible. We use Tusher out of Beaver a lot. We love them. We also are kind of picky. We want to see their product. I also want to know somebody who's going to come back and do all the little stuff. You can get a builder to frame and drywall and do all that stuff, but ask him to come and fix the threshold in front of the door. You know, I might as well wait 6 weeks. So I look at that kind of thing from a general contractor. General contractors generally have relationships with subs, and you're going to get a better product if you work with a GC than if you try to be the GC.
What's next? He'll be talking about the funding programs, USDA, and self-help, all this stuff. So I'll turn it over to Dave Cornati.
Thanks, John. And Charlene, thank you. All right. We take a little different approach, as you can see. We found recycling old mobile homes into a mid-rise building worked pretty nicely in Photoshop. The USDA single-family home housing is broken into a number of areas. First of all, there are direct loans. And those direct loans are used for single family direct loans. Right now, the rate is 3%. Some people will qualify for a lower rate through
the microphone.
Oh, okay.
Let's see.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to see which slide I had up too. So, okay. I guess. Is this working? Oh, okay. Anyway, the single family direct loans, no down payment. They're for low and very low income people. And I'll get into the numbers for how that relates to the income, area median income here for Garfield County. Typically, those are 33-year loans. They can also be 38-year. Oh, the current rate, 3.25%, but they can be as low as 1% with additional grant under certain income conditions. This somehow looks like a little bit of out of order, but they're the same program, part of USDA, funds loans to repair and upgrade existing structures. And I think Utah has underutilized that program. I believe that in areas where you have lots of older housing, this could be very, very beneficial. And you can see the requirements here. You have to be the homeowner and occupy it, unable to obtain credit for elsewhere, and have a household income that does not exceed the county very low limit. And I'll get into that. And they can be grants for older people, 62 and above. And these are important numbers. Garfield County area median income is $83,200. Low income is 80% of AMI, so 66,560. Very low is 50%, it's 41,600. So for somebody, say in Boulder, to qualify for USDA direct loan, they must have an income below that 41.6 figure. And that can be for up to a family of four. The Garfield County single family loan limit, and that has to do with the housing cost of the area, is $336,500. Oh, there was a slide missing. Okay, well, one of the things that I'm kind of a nut about is the design is part of housing affordability. I've had a very long career in housing and community development, and it always bothered me that so many housing agencies say, we can't afford a professional design person because it has to be affordable or attainable housing. I would argue the opposite. You can't afford not to, because the budget is one of the design criteria you have to address. Several years ago, I looked at some USDA self-help housing in Kanab, and they had spent the equivalent, the way the house was designed by the building supervisor for self-help, they had spent $16,000 on wasted space. And so that's an issue. I'd like to go back and see if there's some... Okay, let's... Okay, there's... Where's the self-help?
There it is.
Okay. The mutual self-help housing, a grantee, a nonprofit or housing authority gets a grant from USDA to assist people in building their own homes. And what they do is they provide a building supervisor and staff to make sure the materials are there on time and in order. And they basically manage the job site the way a contractor does. And the participants, the people that get the direct loans to build these, they put in 1,000 hours at a rate of 30 hours a week. Now, per family. Now, the families can bring in friends, relatives, volunteers. So it makes it sound, you know, if you're already working 40 hours a week, 30 more sounds like a big deal. But it includes weekends. A lot of it is weekend. And you can bring in family and friends and other volunteers to go toward those hours. Everybody works on everybody's house generally. And the result is you're building a neighborhood. And there's no construction experience required on the part of the participants. They learn it as they go. And one of the things I've observed on hundreds of these is that some people come in and get involved with this project, and it builds their confidence in other things they can do, including in the building trades. In fact, in Enoch, where Charlene has done some work, one of our participants in self-help housing ended up becoming a building inspector. I'm wondering if it was revenge. I don't know. but these homes are usually very well made because the construction supervisors are demanding. Very often they are retired contractors. And so there's a lot of support because the organization is managing the program. The construction supervisor is instructing and occasionally assisting. Critical trades are subbed out to contractors like wiring, plumbing, et cetera. Again, a lot of these people go in. I was on one in Kalispell, Montana. They were at the stucco stage, and this woman was looking at it at her house, and she's going, "That guy's getting $4,800 for putting mud on the wall. I could do that." She and her husband now have a contracting business doing exactly that. So it oftentimes changes career, not only not only people going into construction, but building a building is a very confidence building exercise. And it gives people the sense of that they can do pretty much anything. I think the self-help housing project is part of USDA's is one of the best programs in housing, in single family housing anywhere. The people own the house when they're done. It's not part of a nonprofit organization. It's not managed by anybody else other than a homeowner once they take it over. The other thing is the equity, the sweat equity that people put into it. One in the Uinta Basin that I did some analysis of, and years ago, these numbers are obsolete. Their work was 30% of the appraised value of the house and lot. And so they went in with, the day they walked in the door, they had a lot of equity. On another situation I looked at in a build of a whole group of self-help homes, the people had the equity that a conventional finance for the same price home would have. So somebody putting 20% down and making payments would have had to pay 19 years before they got to the level of equity these people had when they walked through the door the first time. It doesn't always work quite that well, but Utah has had one of the most successful programs in this in the whole nation. It had less than 2% of the eligible rural population, and in many years was doing 10, 12, up to 15% of the national of the total direct loan housing in the nation. So there's something in the Utah culture. I guess it's the old barn building tradition or something, but it's really worked very, very well here. If that's not all credit to USDA, we are very fortunate that the self-help housing grantees in Utah are top of the line. They are highly dedicated, highly experienced people. A couple of years ago, we had community rebuilds taking applications here in Utah. They're in Garfield County, Boulder specifically. They are based in Moab, and they build straw bale homes. And their homes are now net zero, meaning that they produce as much energy as they consume. The straw bale homes are durable. They have moisture meters in the straw. They're using earthen plasters to close them in. They've learned the trade. There are 100 plus year old straw bale buildings in the Midwest. And it's a good technique. They're obviously very well insulated, and they have nice seats in the window wells because the walls are thick. You have to be careful. You have to have a design that is compatible with the nature of those materials. They use stained adobe floors. They're using all natural materials. Early on, they did have some maintenance issues. I think they've perfected the model, and here in Garfield County and also in Grant County, there are some high dollar luxury straw bale homes that people built not to save money, but just because they like the material. Straw bale homes, the straw bales are not the structure. They use either timber framing inside or they use other kinds of framing like in the corners and various locations within the walls. There is a structure other than the straw bales.
I apologize because we did have, because of tech problems, it took a little longer for Charlene, but since we're going past 8 o'clock, why don't we let a couple other people speak, and then if you want to talk more about construction techniques and design,
okay,
we can pick that up at the end.
Okay. Oh, well, before I jump off,
yeah.
Any questions?
It's a grant, so like if someone qualifies for this, they help build their own house, are they putting money up front, or it's a grant that's just given to them?
Okay, good question. It's all under what they call single family direct loans. It's a federal program. I've got brochures on it over here. It's a federal program. It's no down payment. It's not a grant. It is a loan. And it can be used to just go right out and buy an existing house. It can be used to build one outside of the self-help program. I was talking about self-help program because it's been presented through community rebuilds here before. And there was a lot of interest in it. It's not the only game in town. And then there's also a guaranteed loan that is through a bank that gets a USDA guarantee. I can stick around and answer questions later so I don't hold up other people.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we will come back to you. So, Jerry Taylor, do you mind talking about Garfield County and the great thing that you got done in Escalante?
Yeah. Well, I love Garfield County, that's for sure. And I'm impressed with the amount of people that's here tonight. You're either here because you want some affordable houses or you don't want affordable houses. You guys have to decide that. It's funny, when I was the mayor of Escalante, one of our biggest problems was we didn't have enough housing, and yet we had over 60 homes in Escalante that was unoccupied. In other words, we had families that had lived there, moved away, kept the home, and they come home for the 24th of July, the deer hunt, and Memorial Day. Those 60 homes sat vacant other than that. So it was a problem. I've just been introduced to a program by the governor where he's had some of us taking a leadership course with SUU. And he has someone from every county taking this course. What do you think the number one problem is in every county in the state of Utah? It's housing. It's housing from Logan to St. George to Garfield County. It's housing. It's a problem. When I started this, we started looking for help in Escalante, and we looked at Beaver Housing Authority. They were somewhat interested. They'd come and deal with Panguitch. We looked at the outfit out of Moab. And then Drew Parkin and I heard about NeighborWorks. And so Drew went up and he met with Charlene. And he come back and he says, hey, you know this lady? And he said, her name is Charlene. She claims she went to school with you. I said, she didn't tell you anything else, did she? So anyway, come to find out, it was Charlene Buchanan, okay? Charlene Wild, okay? And that's what started it. We brought everybody together. We got Charlene down, and we met with the mayors, and that's where this thing started. Did I think it would take off like this? No, I didn't. I thought if we could get one or two homes, we'd be lucky. We built two in Tropic. Beaver Housing Authority built five in Panguitch. We built the fourplex in Escalante. You bought six more. What was the subdivision called before you got involved in?
Bryce Valley Meadows.
It was the Bryce Valley Meadows. Bryce Meadows. It turned into ghettos. Okay, we've now turned that around. Charlene has turned around. I also have to tell you something else. You are very lucky. You're very lucky if you want affordable housing because you have the best. You have Charlene and you have Dave. Dave and I have worked together for how many years, Dave? Well, it's been a while.
We're getting old. It
is. You're right. But Dave was director for the state of Utah USDA and rural development. And Charlene is over the nonprofits. And these guys are the best at what they do. We also have someone now at the USDA, Michelle Weaver, which is excellent. The minute she came on, we had three people. We had two people. You helped with the one in Escalante get the loan that they couldn't afford to go to the bank. They got a loan. They built. They bought a home, built a business, which helped out in Escalante. And since Michelle came on, we've got two new homes right now in Escalante through this USDA program. With the low interest, they couldn't get a loan through the bank. They didn't qualify, didn't make enough money. Well, now they have homes. And so this is a big deal. There is something I want to remind you. I want you to call it affordable housing and not low-income housing. When I started this, I had a lady in Escalante come up to me and she says, you're not going to build low-income housing in Escalante. I'm going to make sure there's no low-income housing in Escalante. You should have seen the home that she lived in. I mean, trust me, it was terrible. And so I learned then, you don't call anything low-income housing. It's affordable housing. And it actually looks great. Some of you may not like the fourplex, but you know what I see when I look at it? And I can, right from my home, I look out the window and I can see it. I don't see a building. I see families that have a place to live that help us with employment and help us with putting kids in our schools. That's what I see. If you need the help and you want the help, we're here to help.
Garfield County put up through our SED program $50,000. And I know July next year, I think we've spent the money this year, but if you get your stuff together, there could be $50,000 next year to go towards this. You have partnered with USDA. I'm going to tell you something. Somebody out there is going to get this money. Somebody out there is going to build these homes, build their communities. It might as well be you. But you have to get with it. You can't go fighting over this. You got to work together. Call us. We'll work with you. We'll help you. We'll be here on a Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Okay. And we'll get this, we'll get it done. If that's what you want. I'm sure there's a lot of homes around here that are sitting vacant, but it's because people want to come back here. Thank goodness we found Charlene. Thank goodness we found Dave, and they've been great partners. So, any questions for me?
What do you do about the 60 empty homes in Esco Iron?
They're still there.
Could you repeat the question for the Zoom?
Yes, they want to know what we've done with the 60 homes. Actually, it was like 70 of them, and I think we're down to like 60 now. But that's a problem. People don't want to give up their heritage. They love it here. And they're willing to, because grandma left them the home or dad left them the home. It's a big deal. It hurts your communities. So, but 24th of July, everybody's home. We love it that weekend. And then they sit vacant.
If people, when they have questions, could raise their hand and wait for the mic, we'd like the people on Zoom to be able to hear the question. It's not about just us hearing it here in the room. Thanks.
Any other questions? You live in the most beautiful place in the whole world. I'm just telling you. So,
thank you for coming here. Jim, do you want to say something on behalf of the town council? Jim Catwell, Old Town Council.
Thank you, Charlene, coming, Dave, Jerry. Thanks, Planning Commission, for helping set up everything. Glad everybody can make it out tonight. I do understand the housing is a huge problem for Boulder. I personally think part of our problem with the housing is the ordinances that we have set in place. So some of the ordinances we have are too restrictive for a lot of the different things we could and should want to try to do. Me and John have already talked about going on and reviewing a lot of the land use and housing ordinances together to see if we can figure out to make it easier for people to be able to actually build and live in Boulder. My family, we moved here in 1979 when Boulder was still just 100 people. Housing's always been an issue in Boulder even then. So I do understand what it takes for it. What does Boulder really need to do to make it easier to build in this community? Boulder was originally set up on 2.5 acre lots. It wasn't the 5 acre minimum that we have down Lower Boulder, different things like that. We have to actually make it, try to be able to set different places in Boulder, just like the subdivision where I live. We have to be able to make it to where we can have another subdivision or places to put in fourplexes, duplexes, but we have to actually be able to make it to be, it's affordable, for, well, not affordable, but just obtainable by the town. The town can't be so restrictive that can't have set up anything on it. So maybe it's time to start looking at different parts of Boulder to try to make it easier for people and families to be able to live here. So any suggestions or any help would be awesome. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay,
Jim,
anything else?
Yeah, take a couple questions. I'll switch over to the next. I have a question for Dave Conine. On the USDA grants or lower interest loans, is there any mechanism or problem that might arise from trying to integrate those loans with restrictive deeds to meet the kind of community needs? and also ensure attainable housing so that someone doesn't come in, get a low interest, essentially loan a grant, and essentially what they're doing is building spec homes. The reason I ask that question is because I've seen that happen throughout the state many times.
Dave or Charlene?
Mark, that's a good question. It's a real concern that I think has by now been effectively addressed. In Moab, there was a couple that built a self-help home, so they had the advantage of a very low interest rate and no down payment and all that. And just weeks after they moved in, it was on the market. And now, in that particular case, they had been offered a job elsewhere that they couldn't afford to turn down. But the idea caught fire that, you know, this was a problem. And they, and since then, in Moab, they've created a community land trust, and there are deed restrictions on those homes. And increasingly around the state, there's deed restrictions to keep the houses affordable, but also to avoid the public backlash of taxpayers subsidized your spec home. And that is not happening anymore.
So USA has no fear of those deed restrictions?
No fear of
them? It's not an objection to USDA.
No. In fact, maintaining affordability is a priority. But it's that comes up all the time, and it's an important question to address.
Can you say what a spec home is?
Speculative. Okay. Somebody builds a home with the full expectation of selling it quickly for a profit.
This is maybe a question for Jerry or really anyone in the room who might know more about Utah state legislation. I know there are municipalities in other states that have made taxes for unoccupied homes. And I'm curious, like, if Utah legislation has anything on that, whether that's prohibited, whether it's allowed. I don't think it's happened anywhere in Utah yet, but I'm curious if anyone has looked into that or is willing to look further into that.
So, wow.
There is a little bit. If you own a home in a county that you are not a resident of, your property tax is higher than it would be if you lived in it or if you were renting it to somebody, to a family or whatever. So.
I was enjoying sitting in the back and not participating, but Colorado has authorized municipalities to do a vacant home tax. People are very reluctant to do it because the people who own those vacant homes are politically powerful. But it's in people's minds everywhere, okay? A tax is hard to put together. And so, you know, I think that the real answer would be in the property tax system, not as a separate tax, but to switch the property tax system over to speculative value. And then people would be paying taxes on the homes that would require them to get them rented. But we are mostly politically a long ways from being able to do that. And it's because of what your county commissioner said. People love those homes and the ability to come back to them. I think that it's a really good question. It's a really good thought. It's possible in Colorado. Estes Park has done it. But it's a tough road to hoe politically if you do it in such a like direct in your face way that we're going to tax you for having a vacant house. That's hard to choke down. New York allows it as well. It's not impossible in certain places, but Most people who are authorized to do it don't use it because of the politics of it.
Thank you. Jade, you got a question there?
I have a question for anybody who might be able to answer this. So with you were discussing the USDA loans, what type of hidden costs or undisclosed costs are part of that, such as like PM property mortgage insurance? USDA is always, well, typically requires like a minimum of 10 years be paid on their loans. And are there other expenses on that as well, on that type of loan?
One of these things. Okay. Again, good questions. The USDA loans I've been talking about, there's no PMI.
Can you say what PMI is?
Private mortgage insurance. And I don't know what you're referring to when you talk about 10 years.
I have looked into those, and I have in the past looked into those. And they will tell you that there is a minimum of 10 years of PMI required on a USDA loan.
No.
Well, maybe there are different types, but that was my understanding.
That might be true with the guaranteed loans because that's through a bank.
Other questions? These programs you're talking about, when it comes to home ownership, maybe even some rentals, the people who qualify for these housing options, are there restrictions that say they're not allowed to rent it out to anybody else and it has to be occupied by the homeowner? And is this just for families or for single individuals? And besides being low income, what are the qualifications? I mean, they still have to pass all of the requirements for funding to get a loan, et cetera.
Okay. The loans through USDA are for anybody, a single individual or a large family and everything in between. There's what was the other part of your question?
About renting it out.
Oh, they are for owner occupied, and the home can't even be designed to include a business. Now, working online at your home is not a problem, but if you set it up to provide a service. I suppose, for example, technically, you would not be able to running a repair business or something like that in the home. They are for housing.
Can you rent out rooms for other individuals?
Mostly not, because the idea of it is to create the ownership environment. I think after it's paid off, they're not going to tell you anything about that, but it is not intended to be rental. Now, I know cases where that has been done. In fact, I know of one here in town, and it hasn't gotten anybody in trouble. I'm not advocating trying it, but and there may be flexibility under certain conditions where somebody could get permission to do that. But that's not the intent of the program.
Other questions?
It looked like there was a cap on the loan value of like $300,000-something. Is that correct?
The loan limit in Garfield County, because technically these have to be affordable housing, so the loan limit is $336,500. And by the way, one of the other things, there is a requirement for a credit score of at least 640. Most of the housing agencies that do these programs will work with applicants that have a lower score and help them reduce their debt and get to a higher credit score. And they usually are very good at it.
I just want to point out that you can't even buy a plot of land in Boulder for that price currently, let alone build a house.
I'd comment on that. That is really what we're talking about here and what Jim Catmull is talking about. If we have it's great to have one house on 5 acres, but at current land prices, you're right, it can't be done. Now, a duplex on 1 acre, yes, you could do that. A tiny home on a half acre that's on the corner of somebody's farm field up on the rocky hillside, that might be feasible. But that's the kind of creative thinking and the changes to our approach that we really have to do to make it affordable. Because this town, if you look at the statistics, we have much higher, we are at the high end of real estate costs compared to the state and at the low end of wages.
I have to speak to that. When we started this, Tropic was, they wanted housing for people. There was a gentleman that came to our first meeting. He was on the town council, and he owned 2 lots in Tropic. Okay. And he had bought them to make money. He literally sold both of those lots for around $8,000 so that he could see somebody build some housing for his community.
They were valued $30,000, and he let me purchase them for $7,500.
Could you say that louder for the Zoom people, please?
Come on up, Charlene.
Yes, he actually, they were valued at the time, and this has been about 4 years ago. They were valued on the county records at $30,000 a lot. So, you know, that was about 15 to 20% under what he could have sold them for. And he sold them to me for $7,500 a lot, because he wanted housing in Tropic.
I have one more comment. Sure. It's more of a comment, but I want to recognize, I think that it's the right of landowners to sell at market value. And what we're asking for is essentially for people to sell below market value to locals. I've watched that happen here, and I've also watched the town make it extremely difficult. So I hope in this meeting, and from what I'm hearing, that we can start working towards making it easier for those sorts of subdivisions and really of gestures and offering of goodness to people who have lower income around here to just make them easier with less fighting and yelling.
We need to support our young people. We really do. It's important.
And I agree. And beyond that, what you talked about, a tiny house on a rock outcropping on half an acre and a fourplex are not necessarily what the people who actually want to live here and stay here want. And so I just want to, if we're actually going to make this something that's going to be helpful for the people who want to stay here, then we need to be considering other options than that.
Well, I mean, this is what Charlene was talking about. This is the challenge that we all would love to have something beautiful on a big lot, but you have the realities of what is affordable. And that comes to the amount of land, the square footage of the building. And balancing those is, you want to say something? It's tough.
It is hard. I'm not kidding. It's really hard to put these deals together. That's why we go out and try to get grants and things to make it something that you are interested in having and something that, but you do. Eventually, you want young families to move in. That's the lifeblood of a community. But it is hard. And that's why I tried to show you some options that maybe you can get your arms around and your brain around a little bit, but come up with some designs that work for the community and the people that are already here, but that will also be attainable for those young families like this. This young gentleman back here, I know he wants to become a homeowner. I can see that. I can feel that. He wants to stay in this town. And so we need to not cut him out because we have such high level of requirements. You need to provide him an opportunity. And I will promise you, he'll probably be a great citizen in this community.
Already is.
Yeah. So let's help him.
Thank you, John, for being a great citizen of this community. My name's Madeline. I'm a recent great citizen of this great community. And one thing I'm trying to understand about the lay of the land here, these options exist theoretically for young folks like myself who are seeking attainable housing. What is Town Council and Planning Commission doing to make them accessible for folks like me? I'd love to know what's currently in the works. Awesome. Thank you.
This meeting is the outcome of what the passion of Boulder and the town council, and I'm only an alternate in this planning committee, but I'm telling you, there's passion. And it's been expressed to me ever since I've been here that it is not balanced right now. And that's why we're having a meeting like we are, thanks to the Planning Commission and the ones that are standing up front. So that makes a big, big difference of being all educated on the same time of what we're, where our hearts are and what we're trying to change in this community to make the young ones stay and have a place.
Okay, that was a great segue. Since I'm seeing people leave, what I'm going to do is run real quickly through next steps and talk about community working groups, and then we can go back to Q&A. So what's going on? Between now and next spring, we want to have some community working groups. I'm going to describe three working groups that are looking at housing needs, the housing providers, the people with the land and the real estate investment experience, the community vision to make the continuity with all the work that was done on the general plan and the previous housing forum. But I've got a very exciting thing here. Artina, you're on. Something very exciting has happened in the last week that answers some of the questions about where we go find some land. So, Tina?
I was at the community council. Thank you. The community council meeting, and I shared that we were doing this with the superintendent of Garfield County, which is John, right?
John.
And he was very supportive of the idea of actually getting the school board to come to consider using this lot part of this lot that is just down here to the south as a potential teacher's building site. And so what we're hoping to do is to work as a planning commission and through through the county, and come up with a plan of what exactly we need and what funds are out there to make that happen. So that's one piece of property that hopefully will help the school. And as you all know, the ability to get a teacher here is very difficult. The school started with very little support on that, and hopefully we have teachers here right now who are desperate for places to live. So this might be a beginning of that problem or solving. So that's what we're working on.
Yeah. You want to add something, Dave? Yeah, but to me, this is like so exciting because I have housing that is employer-based next for the school would help this school so much. So I'm just excited, and I think we have a group of people from the school community council who are going to start getting organized on that. So it becomes a fourth work group. Dave?
there is a program called Employer Assisted Housing. And I think it was originally conceived of as a way for school districts to retain teachers. Rural school districts, teachers come in right fresh out of school, they get a little bit of experience, and they move on to where there's a higher salary. And I've written two employer-assisted housing programs for counties, and neither county implemented one, so I still have them as a scrap of paper, and I'll donate it.
Okay. So the goal is we'll get these community working groups going, kind of to put a time frame on it. Let's use this winter. So by next March, have another community meeting, but this one where the work groups can present what they've concluded, what they've learned, what progress we've made. As Jim Cadwell said, you know, the Planning Commission can start working on ordinance changes. And one of the things to address what Madeline raised and you raised was creating incentives so that, yes, a landowner would like to sell at market value, but the town might be able to set up a system where we say, if you include affordable housing in your plan, we're going to allow you extra lots to sell. That way, the project can actually make more money for the landowner or just as much as he would have otherwise. But there's a deed-restricted affordable lot in the mix. So we're as Planning Commission, we're going to work on that. And something Tessa has brought up so eloquently in her letter was that we've got these initial existing small-scale initiatives. Somebody who sold a piece of land to somebody who works for them, somebody who sold a piece of land to a friend, people who've created a ADU in their house for somebody to live in. Those all add to our housing stock. And putting in perspective, we've only got around 120 houses in Boulder. So if we add 5 affordable houses to Boulder, that's a huge percentage. So we do want to keep those in. We can look at big projects, but we're probably going to make more progress with these existing small scale projects. So, housing needs, free work groups. Maybe you can do that for me, Tina. Housing provide, so workers, employers, families. And one of the big things we need to do is quantify the amount of housing needed, like Charlene said. Do we need 4-bedroom houses? Or do we need housing for single people? Or is it for couples? Is it for seasonal workers? We need to get a handle on how many people feel they're underhoused and what kind of housing they're looking for and at their wages, what they can afford. We need to get those numbers. The people who are in that situation really are the ones who can help us find those numbers. Housing providers, landowners, and potential investors. And one of the big things there is, okay, how are we going to make the numbers work? So somebody can say, yes, I'll do an affordable housing project because when I pencil it out, my accountant says this is going to work for me. And then community vision, as I said, have the continuity with the general plan and the previous housing work. I think next slide. So housing needs is one. We've got a sign-up sheet there. Housing providers is another sign-up sheet there. Community vision, there's a sign-up sheet there. So please, if you want to help move this forward, sign up. Each of those work groups is going to self-organize. You can decide yourselves. Do you want to do email newsletters? Do you want to do Zoom meetings? Do you want to do getting together by the post office on Monday morning? It's up to you to figure out how to self-organize. But if you want to be organized, we will have at least one person from planning, but I'd like to have somebody, especially somebody from out in the county who's outside Boulder Town, so both are represented. Facilitating each work group, sign up. Sign up sheets are there. I think there's even some pencils. I think that's so now. I think we'll just go right to the last slide. I think you went up.
Can we take another question?
Yeah, we're going to start taking questions here. So I think, okay, so yep, that's it. Thank you. Thank you, everyone here. We could stay. If people want to stay and ask more questions, we will do that. If people need to go and take care of the rest of their life, thank you. Thank you for coming. I think it's been a great meeting. It succeeded all my expectations. So,
hey, John,
more questions.
There's a question of if someone can be in more than one work group.
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, so yes, please sign up. Other questions?
Locke has one.
I'm probably going to say some stuff that's not popular, but I think the whole push here is to go to smaller lots, and I'm dead set against that. I think it'll really ruin the character of this town. And I'm not really worried about housing. Everybody here has got a place to live, and people are incredibly inventive when they need to stay warm and dry. They do whatever they have to do. They do it in Seattle. They do it in San Francisco. They do it in Portland. They do it in Los Angeles, you know, and you know, when housing costs, you know, when a studio apartment costs $5,000 a month, people do what they have to do. And, you know, no amount of ordinances or planning or anything will stop people from staying warm and dry. So I'm not really worried about that. I think changing the ordinances to smaller lots, you know, if a 5-acre lot costs $500,000 and you got to spend $250,000 more to build a house, yeah, that's not attainable or affordable, you know, and we can change the words attainable, affordable. If it's not affordable, it's not attainable. And, you know, if you got a 2.5-acre lot and that costs $250,000 and you got to spend another $250,000 to build a house, well, that's not affordable or attainable either. I think I read something, housing mortgage loan applications and housing starts are at 1934 levels. Fed's tightening all the time. You know, I mean, there's some headwinds that everybody's got to face, and basically people are going to do what they have to do. So I don't think lowering the acreage is going to help anything. And I'm not for that at all. So that's all I got to say.
Anyone else, Mark?
I have a lot of questions about that. There are many ways to address the concerns a lot of people have about changing zoning ordinances. It doesn't have to open the door to complete chaos and homogeneous zoning throughout the community. You don't have to make everything a 1/4-acre, 1/2-acre lot. We have a general plan. We have a vision. As long as these changes occur and are consistent and required by law to follow the vision of the general plan, we're trying to retain a community with the agricultural feel and the rural feel that Boulder currently has. I believe that we can creatively work together, find areas in the community. It's not going to be everywhere, where you can make smaller, affordable homes. You can also put deed restrictions. The planning and zoning, the town council can limit, they negotiate with the developer. Well, gee whiz, that doesn't do us any good if you're gonna sell this for $100,000 each. So there's solutions to answer some of the concerns that not only Locke, but many people, including myself, have in this community. So thanks.
So we're talking about Boulder as a town. Well, a big part of the area out here is the county. I've never even heard any numbers about how many people need to live here because they work here or they just want to live here, but they don't make enough money, which to me, sorry, you know, that's not everybody else's problem. But if you work here and you're trying to find something affordable here, why are we always hearing that it's the town of Boulder? What about the county that lies all around here? Aren't there options for the county? People who have land or own land in the county, why is it so focused on Boulder County?
Well, that's why I have emphasized this is for all of 84716. Salt Gulch to the draw. That's why we invited County Commissioner Jerry Taylor here, and why I've said, if an affordable housing is created in the draw, that still helps the town.
Yeah, and what are their ordinances? Maybe their ordinances already comply with what people want to see here.
Yeah.
Who's talking about that? I never hear anything about county
unless ordinances. You make resort residential. 5 acres. Yeah, but
well, maybe the county needs to change.
Yeah, you have some reserved residential up in this in the Salt Gulch, don't you? I think there's something that's reserved residential zoned up there, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I should have brought Caden with me tonight.
Yeah,
Caden knows all that. But you do realize that your landmass in Boulder is the largest community in Garfield County.
You mean just the town?
Just the town. Your town is boundaries is bigger than all the other communities.
Just, well, is it because it's a ranching community?
Yeah.
That has been for so many years.
Yeah, we have the map right over there. I can show you after the meeting. Yeah, how huge we are. It's national forest. But
we're willing to look at whatever to help, to look to see what people in this area want.
Thanks. So, we have a question from Phoenix.
So, this is Phoenix. I know a lot of the options, and I'm not sure who this question would be for, but I know that a lot of the options that you've been talking about are mostly for, say, you know, assistance for people who want to buy a home. And I'm curious if there are any programs that could have potentially assist or grants for, say, people who own land and wanted to build something to then rent as affordable housing. Are there programs for that? Is this something we can look into?
Hey, Charlene or Dave? Because that is one of the things for the housing providers, if they can get a subsidy to build.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't have to be a nonprofit to do this. You can be a for-profit. And they can build a home and they can, but what I found over the years is that the for-profit tends to raise the rents a little higher than, and doesn't, you know, they were there, the for-profit thing is there, unless they're renting to a family member, and then they tend to keep it at the affordable level. But that's where, yeah, that's usually what I run into there.
Anyone else?
Gosh.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw out a couple ideas. One is, I mean, I'm going to sound kind of like a jerk, but if you want anyone in this town to solve your problem for you, then you might be in the wrong town. That's my experience living here. I've worked ridiculously hard to create my life here, and I'm only so interested in seeing it get easier. You know, do we want to see twice as many people in Boulder 20 years from now, 2% population growth? I don't know if anyone in this room does. So we have to think about what do we want our target growth to be. In the last 10 years that I've owned property, I've seen a fairly good tick of young families make it work here. Maybe only 5% of those coming through town, maybe one, but is one young couple or family or group enough per year getting land here in this town? That seems pretty good to me. But so I think that's an important context to keep in mind through all this. But I also want to say that there's a nonprofit in town called the Boulder Community Alliance that's been sitting idle for years that, like me and Pam and Ron run, is just sitting there doing nothing, fully ready to do something. They have all the craps in line that we have to maintain every year. And, you know, maybe one approach to this is we start a land trust with that, and whatever land gets donated to the land trust at whatever size it gets donated is the land that we decide to subdivide in whatever parcel that is. So if someone has 100 acres and they donate 1 acre to the land trust in the corner of their field, well, by God, that's a reason to create a 1 acre lot in the middle of nowhere. Like, that's one approach to this. And then it guarantees the affordability over time as well. And it kind of solves a lot of the blanket issues, because no one's going to donate that much land, but it does create a tax benefit. And then it creates a distributed zoning environment, which is basically what we have now, like 1 acre lots randomly distributed around town for the most part. And that's pretty rad for the most part. And it also keeps things moving forward affordably. So anyway,
awesome.
That's all my
other questions. Other questions? If not, just stay around and talk informally for a while.
Can I just say that one of the things that we have been talking about is that there is definitely room for creativity. And I know that this town is very creative on a lot of levels. And this is something that we need to all agree on how we're going to move forward or not. But thanks, Josh.
Yes, thank you. I want to really beg the people in the audience here tonight and the friends who didn't make it here, if you are looking for a place to live, land, house to build, et cetera, if you are interested in providing housing, please, we need you on the work group so that the information that is going to help inform the decisions that get made. I mean, once it hits planning commission, it's like they're the structures in place, which are being worked, but the structure's in place. And it's kind of like, then it goes down this rabbit hole and there we are. It's like without the information going in of who needs housing, how much, what kind, where's it going to be, how expensive, varieties, et cetera, we need that information from you guys. So please, I beg of you to sign up for the housing. What's the name of that one? There's the providers going around, but the housing needs work group. We need people on that. We need your information.
Hi, I am considered an outsider right now. My daughter Phoenix has been living in Boulder for 5 years, and I thank everybody who has accepted her and like embraced her. And it's made me love this community so much. I'm going to try to stay calm. I just want every one of you to know that we love this community and we love it the way it is right now. We love the openness. We love the spaciousness. We love the fact that there's creative people that come here. We love the fact that you guys are making it work. And I just want you to know that we want to help you guys in whatever way possible to make that happen. And because we want to also preserve that, not just for you, but for generations to come. And so we're here to support our daughter, but we're also here to support the community. I can't guarantee that we can do anything, but I just want you to know that we're here in spirit with you guys. And we want to keep the character of this community as much as possible, but yet allow people to experience it and love it as much as you all do and as much as we all do. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you everyone for taking your evening to be here. It's just been so gratifying to see this turnout. I think there might be a few cookies left back there. Eat them up.
Eat the cookies.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I've really been looking forward to this meeting. There's a lot of you that have lived here a lot longer than I have. However, the older folks, we will be passing on one day. So we need the younger folks, and we need them moving into Boulder. And I know it's not going to happen all at once, but I am telling you, with everything I've heard tonight, it's doable. We're not perfect. We're going to have to make some hard decisions, but everybody that has input tonight has had some good ideas. So I don't know that I can come on a committee. I kind of got my hands full right now, but just get involved, because that's what it's going to take to get where we want to be. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.